理课堂听 class.com。
亲爱的同学们，欢迎你们访问情境论坛，我们将为您的学习提供全新、最快、最优质的服务。
Passage 6 Directions。For questions 1 to 5, you will hear a tour guide talking about 3 places of interest in a city. While you listen, complete the sentences or answer the questions. Use not more than 3 words for each answer.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our tour. This morning, we're going to take you to some points of historical interest in the city. If you have any questions,Please don't hesitate to ask. If you look out of the window on your right, you'll see the Grange, one of the oldest homes in the city. It was built for our first mayor 200 years ago. Perhaps the most interesting thing is that every Saturday afternoon, you can come and watch them bake bread the way it was done 200 years ago. On your left is University College.This university building is just 125 years old. It's interesting because many people claim they've seen a ghost walking through it late at night. After a fire destroyed one section, a skeleton was found. Police believe it is the body of a stone carver who disappeared while the college was being built. He and another man were both in love with the same woman. You can guess the rest.We'll be stopping in a moment at Bridgeton Castle. This castle was built by Sir Henry Pallott for his young bride. He imported almost all the building materials from England. Notice the beautiful stained glass windows. Unfortunately, Sir Henry's young bride became ill and died before the castle was completed.This castle is interesting because Sir Henry became so unhappy that he left the castle and returned to England. No family member ever lived here. All of these places offer guided tours. If you want to go, they're easy to get to, and I can give you maps at the end of the tour. From your hotel, it's a short walk to the Grange, about 15 minutes.If you want to see the ghost at University College, you can get there on the college streetcar. If you are interested in seeing a real English castle, it's better to go by subway. Passage 7. Directions. For questions 1 to 5, you will hear an interview with a model. While you listen, complete the sentences or answer the questions.Use not more than 3 words for each answer. Well, how do you keep yourself in such fantastic shape, Patty? Do you belong to a health club?
No, I don't. I don't need to because I get plenty of exercises every day.
Oh, what do you do? I suppose you have all sorts of expensive equipment.
No, I don't use any equipment, actually.
Do you jog?
No, I don't like jogging much. It bores me.
You don't jog. Did you used to jog?
Well, yes, I did used to jog, but it bored me, so I stopped.
So what sports do you play?
I swim a lot. I go to the pool about 4 times a week, and I try to swim at least a mile.
Wow, you swim 4 miles a week? How long does it take you to finish a mile?
About 30 minutes.
And what other sports do you play?
Well, tennis is my major sport.
Really? And how often do you play tennis?
A couple of times a week. Listen, are you sure your readers are that interested in me?
Well, I may not use everything. Just a few more questions, though. What about your diet? Do you keep to any special diet?
Well, I eat little meat. I don't think it's good for you to eat a lot of meat. Mind, I'm not a vegetarian.But I usually have meat only once or twice a week. I eat a lot of fruit and vegetables.
I see. And I don't suppose you smoke.
No, I haven't smoked for over 5 years.
And how much sleep do you usually get?
Well, you really need to get plenty of sleep in my profession. We have to start work very early in the day, so I try to get at least 7 hours every night.
Well, thanks for sharing your beauty secrets with us.
Passage 8. Directions. For questions 1 to 5, you will hear a talk about inventions. While you listen, complete the sentences or answer the questions. Use not more than 3 words for each answer.
There have been many great inventions, things that changed the way we live. The first great invention was one that is still very important today, the wheel. This made it easier to carry heavy things and to travel long distances. For hundreds of years after that, there were few inventions that had as much effect as the wheel. Then, in the early 1800s, the world started to change. There was little unknown land left in the world. People did not have to explore much anymore. They began to work instead to make life better. In the second half of the 19th century, many great inventions were made. Among them were the camera, the electric light, and the radio. These all became a big part of our life today. The first part of the 20th century saw greater inventions. The helicopter in 1909, movies with sound in 1926, the computer in 1928, and jet planes in 1930. This was also a time when a new material was first made. Nylon came out in 1935. It changed the kind of clothes people wear. The middle part of the 20th century brought new ways to help people get over disease. They worked very well. They made people healthier and let them live longer. By the 1960s, most people could expect to live to be at least 60. By this time, most people had a very good life. Of course, new inventions continued to be made, but man now had a desire to explore again. The world was known to man, but the stars were not. Man began looking for ways to go into space. In 1969, man took his biggest step away from Earth. Americans first walked on the moon. This is certainly just a beginning, though. New inventions will someday allow us to do things we have never yet dreamed of. Chapter 3, Section 3. Passage 1. Questions 1 to 4 are based on the following talk given by a campus guide.
Good morning. My name is Marcia, and I'm a senior in the math department here at Madison. Today, Greg and I will be taking you around to a few places you'll be visiting a lot. Before we start, though, does everyone have a copy of the map of the campus? You should really keep this with you for the first couple of weeks, at least until you become familiar with the buildings and landmarks. You sure wouldn't want to miss any classes this early in a term. Today, we'll visit some of the most important places on campus. First, we'll go to the registrar's office, where you'll sign up for your classes. So, if you haven't seen your advisor yet, you can wait in the commons outside while the others get their class schedule. You'll have to come back here on your own later. Next, we'll go to the library. I think you'll be pretty impressed with the rare book collection. And finally, we'll go to the cafeteria, where you'll probably spend a lot of time socializing, at least until your first exams are scheduled. The number of the rooms for your class will be on the schedule you'll get from the registrar, and it'll be up to you to find those rooms yourselves. So, if there's no questions, we'll start the tour now. Passage 2. Questions 5 to 7 are based on the following talk about technological changes in the workplace.
Thank you all for coming up this evening to meet sociologist Ellen Lambert. Mr. Lambert specializes in research on the workplace and recently has been writing about the future of work. This topic should be of special interest since I know many of you are already at the forefront of workplace technology. For example, let's have a show of hands to see how many people here telecommute in part of the time. I see 8 hands raised. Well, you 8, both working at home and communicating with your office via computer, represents one of the trends Mr. Lambert has described. People are becoming less tied to the workplace. One of the important tools for telecommuting is the electronic mail, or email. Email lets you send and receive messages almost immediately on your computer, but you control when you read them and when you respond to them. This technology allows people to have more control over time than one relying solely on the telephone. Our guest tonight would discuss how these important changes will alter the way we work. But before turning the flow over to Mr. Lambert, I would just like to remind you that he would be available to answer any individual questions at the reception immediately following this talk. Passage 3. Questions 8 to 10 are based on the following talk about wit and humor.
I am not sure that I can draw an exact line between wit and humor. Perhaps the distinction is so subtle that only those persons can decide who have long white beards. But even an ignorant person may express an opinion on this matter. I am quite positive that humor is the more comfortable and livable quality for humorous persons, if their gift is genuine and not a mere shine upon the surface, are always agreeable companions. They have pleasant mouths turned up at the corners, to which the great master of marionettes has fixed the strings, and he holds them in his nimblest fingers to twitch them at the slightest joke. But the mouth of a merely witty man is hard and sour, nor is the flash from a witty man always comforting, but a humorous man radiates a general pleasure. I admire wit, but I have no real liking for it. It has been too often employed against me, whereas humor is always an ally. It never points an irrelative finger into my defects. A wit's tongue, however, is as sharp as a donkey's stick. I may gallop the faster for its prodding, but the touch behind is too persuasive for any comfort. Wit is a lean creature with a sharp, inquiring nose, whereas humor has a kindly eye and a comfortable girth. Wit has a better voice in a solo, but humor comes into the chorus best. Wit keeps the season's fashions and is precise in the phrases and judgments of the day, but humor is concerned with homely, eternal things. Passage 4. Questions 11 to 13 are based on the following talk on architecture.
Architecture is to building as literature is to the printed word. The best buildings are often so well constructed that they outlast their original use. Then they survive not only as beautiful objects, but as documents of the history of cultures. These achievements are never wholly the work of individuals. Architecture is a social art. The Renaissance brought about an entirely new age, not only in philosophy and literature, but in the visual arts as well. In architecture, the principles and styles of ancient Greece and Rome were brought back to life and reinterpreted. They remain dominant until the 20th century. Many kinds of stone are used as building materials. Stone and marble were chosen for important monuments because they are not burnable and can be expected to endure. Stone architecture was often blended with stone sculpture. The use of stone has declined, however, because a number of other materials are more adaptable to industrial use. The complexity of modern life calls for a variety of buildings. more people live in mass housing and go to work in large office buildings. They spend their income in large shopping centers, send their children to many different kinds of schools, and when they are sick, they go to specialized hospitals and clinics. All these different types of buildings accumulated experiences needed by their designers. By the middle of the 20th century, modern architecture, which was influenced by new technology and mass production, was dealing with increasingly complex social needs. Important characteristics of modern architectural works are expanses of glass and the use of reinforced concrete. Advances in elevator technology, air conditioning, and electric lighting have all had important effects. Passage 5. Questions 14 to 16 are based on the following talk about health food.
Health food is a general term applied to all kinds of foods that are considered more healthful than the types of foods widely sold in supermarkets. For example, whole grains, dried beans, and corn oil are health foods. A narrower classification of health food is natural food. This term is used to distinguish between types of the same food. Raw honey is a natural sweetener, whereas refined sugar is not. Fresh fruit is a natural food, but canned fruit, with sugars and other additives, is not. The most precise term of all, and the narrowest classification within health foods, is organic food, used to describe food that has been grown on a particular kind of farm. Fruits and vegetables that are grown in gardens that are treated only with organic fertilizers, that are not sprayed with poisonous insecticides, and are not refined after a harvest, are organic foods. Meats, fish, dairy, and poultry products from animals that are fed only organically grown food and that are not injected with hormones are organic foods. In choosing the type of food you eat, then, you have basically two choices: inorganic, processed foods, or organic, unprocessed foods. A wise decision should include investigation of the allegations that processed foods contain chemicals, some of which are proven to be toxic, and that vitamin content is greatly reduced in processed foods. Passage 6. Questions 17 to 19 are based on the following passage about the circulation of British newspapers.
Visitors to Britain are sometimes surprised to find that newspapers there have such a large circulation. The Daily Mirror and the Daily Express both sell about 4 million copies every day. British families generally buy a newspaper every morning and frequently take 2 or 3 on Sundays. Apart from the national papers, local newspapers have a weekly circulation of 13 million. Almost every town and country area has one. Nearly all of them hold their own financially, and many of them are very profitable. These papers are written almost entirely for readers interested in local events, births, weddings, deaths, council meetings, and sports. But the content is naturally influenced by the kind of community they serve. Editors prefer to rely on a small staff of people who all know the district well. A great deal of local news get out of date as quickly as national news. The editor must never forget that the success of any newspaper depends on advertising. He is usually anxious to keep the goodwill of local businessmen for this reason. But if the newspaper is well written and the news items have been carefully chosen to attract local readers, the businessmen are grateful for the opportunity to keep their products in the public eye. Passage 7. Questions 20 to 23 are based on the following conversation about a survey result.
Sam, could you review the results of the survey on leisure sporting activities again? We need to plan out our proposal for this Friday's business meeting.
Sure, Mary. I've summarized the results in the handout, broken down by consumer age groups and sporting activities. The survey was administered to 550 men and women between the ages of 18 and 55 years old. And the results have been compiled in the following age groups: 18 to 26, 27 to 35, 36 to 45, and 46 to 55. According to the results, the most active group involved in sporting activities are those between 18 and 26 years old, followed by those 36 to 45 years old.
Okay.
As far as particular sports are concerned, people in these two groups cited jogging as their favorite recreational sport, followed by skiing, tennis, swimming, and cycling.
Based on what you have said, I think we should consider targeting the 18 to 26-year-old age group more in the future. I also feel we should consider expanding our line of athletic shoes, particularly jogging and tennis footwear. We also have to come up with a more appealing slogan aimed at this age group.
I see what you mean. However, when these results are compared with the survey carried out 3 years ago, we can see a growing trend among older consumers. I believe this trend will continue, so we should focus on this group instead.
I see your point. Well, let's meet again on Wednesday to iron out more of the details of this proposal.
Passage 8. Questions 24 to 27 are based on a phone conversation between two friends who are discussing a problem. Hello?
Hello, Sam. This is Paula Hansen. Sorry to bother you, but I'm having a small problem I thought you might be able to help me with.
Sure, Paula. What's up?
Well, you know Sarah and I moved into an off-campus apartment in the fall, over the west side of town. Anyway, we've been happy with it until the past couple of months.
Yeah? What happened?
Well, the dishwasher broke down, so we reported it to Miss Connors, the owner. She said she'd take care of it, but a month went by and nothing happened.
Did you get back in touch with her?
I got a repairman to give me an estimate. Then I sent it to her. When I didn't hear from her, I had the repair done, and I deducted the cost from the rent check.
So, what's the problem?
She called here mad as a hornet. She said she could have gotten the repair done for less money. Now she's threatening to evict us for not paying the full rent. We would run into trouble, for we can't get another apartment so soon.
Hold on, Paula. It does sound pretty serious, but I'm sure you can all sit down and work this out.
Well, you are over at the law school, so I wondered if you would mind coming with Sarah and me when we go to talk to Miss Connors. We're supposed to meet with her tomorrow night at 8.
Sure. I haven't studied a lot about contracts yet, but I'd be glad to help you straighten things out. Why don't I stop by at about 7:30?
Thanks, Sam. You're a lifesaver. Passage 9. Questions 28 to 31 are based on the following conversation about blushing.
Hi, Sarah. What's up?
Oh, hi. I just got out of a history class. I had to give a presentation.
How did it go?
Terribly. I'm sure I made a fool of myself.
Why? Weren't you prepared?
No, it's not that. I just get so embarrassed and nervous whenever I've got to speak in front of a group of people. I stand up and my face gets red, and then I get even more nervous because I know everyone can see me blushing.
It is not so bad to blush.
But it happens all the time. If the professor asks a question and I know the answer, I'll blush like crazy if he calls on me. Doesn't that ever happen to you?
No, not really. Maybe you should try to forget about the people. Look at something else in the room, like the exit sign.
I guess I could try that, but I doubt it will help.
You know, we talked about this in psychology class. blushing, even though it's involuntary, is more or less a learned behavior.
What do you mean?
Oh, children hardly ever blush at all. And among adults, supposedly women blush more than men.
I wonder why.
I don't know, but I had a friend in high school, Brian Smith. It was really easy to make him blush. He turned red whenever a waitress would ask him for his order.
I'm not that bad. Well, I've got to get going for my next class. I'll talk to you later.
Passage 10. Questions 32 to 34 are based on a dialogue on online education in China.
How do you look at the so-called digital gap between the rich and the poor, between the urban areas and the rural areas in China?
Actually, the internet technology can bridge the gap between the poor and the rich. Take the development of the Northwest China as example. I used to think it would be very difficult for the internet to be widely accessible in those areas. But actually, the government invested money and made the broadband internet access possible in Guizhou and Gansu, because the government realized it was impossible to have so many teachers in those areas.
The biggest problem that e-education is confronted with is probably the development of good courseware. What are the difficulties involved?
There are technologies that make collaborative work and learning possible. For example, in North America, there are tools that professors use across vast continents to share knowledge, to work on common problems, either for the purpose of research or teaching. In China, we have started to see tools of this kind. The company I am working for provides such tools for teachers, professors, and trainers to collaborate over the internet on courseware, learning materials, and other learning objects.
I have a question about conducting examinations online. How do you make sure the results of the examination are reliable online?
This is the big problem and the big headache for us at the moment. We have developed the online testing program. However, we can't implement it because we have no way to check whether the examinee is the real examinee. So, at this moment, we cannot do any serious online testing, except for what we call safe monitoring testing. The students can test themselves for their own purpose and check their own progress. Any serious examination has to be done in the traditional classroom.
Passage 11.